The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Night. It's Harry Cooper night. It's Shark Hunters night. And we have a wonderful trip for you tonight. A voyage, a journey, and I hope you can sit back and enjoy it. If you are online now, most of you are, go to the guest section and click on photos and load the page at Shark Hunters. What we're going to do is go to their page tonight rather than put the photos on our own pages. And you can see how nicely they're laid out with descriptions. All of the tours are up there at Shark Hunters. You can look at the top and look for previous tours. You can take a trip with Harry anytime you'd like. A trip back in time, a trip to present time, a trip to history as it really happened. Harry, of course, is the man who, along with some help from some very special friends, has informed the world about the big lie that Adolf Hitler died with Eva Braun in the bunker. They didn't. They went to Argentina, as did tens of thousands of other Germans of high rank, scientific, military, business, you name it. They all went to South America, most to Argentina, and many of them were flown there by American pilots with DC-4s. Those are Douglas aircraft, four-engine transports. At the end of the war, they were very popular, and they I don't know how many there were, but they fitted them with long-range fuel tanks. And I did talk to someone who had a very close friend who was in his 90s. He's passed, unfortunately, before I could get him on the program here. And he was a pilot, a P-51 pilot. After the war, his entire squadron was kept in Germany, and they were retrained and checked out to fly DC-4s. He made two trips to Argentina, and he was not allowed to see what was in the back of the plane. They were kept up front. He said he saw people getting on board and crates and so forth. And so it was a major airlift that the United States was involved in. Hitler himself and Eva Braun and others probably didn't go that route. They probably went on a very amazing six-engine plane, which you can see on the cover of Hitler in Argentina. And I hope all of you will buy the book and read the truth about what happened to Hitler and his wife, Eva Braun. The documented truth of Hitler's escape from Berlin. It is an extraordinary story. It is the truth. We know now by studying FBI records that Hoover knew about it, and he actually issued a memo calling off all agents in their search for Hitler in South America. He was told to. We got in exchange for flying all these Germans to South America and allowing Hitler and Eva Braun to escape all of the German scientific genius that we could get our hands on. Some of it went to the Soviet Union, but most of it, the lion's share, came here through Operation Paperclip. With that, let's go down to Florida and say hello to the maestro, Harry Cooper.
Good evening.
That's your cue. See, I said 400 words,
good
and
evening.
You, 400 words out, and I get 2 words back. Good evening. All right. That's okay.
Well, how can I top what you did?
Well, I just told the truth. Now, Harry is an extraordinary and intrepid researcher. He's a discoverer. He's Indiana Jones. He's an explorer. And to get ready for these trips, this was a solo journey that he made, not a tour. He does a lot of, they say the legs are the first thing to go. Harry keeps his legs in wonderful shape. And what he does, this is a secret, he climbs up and down a ladder very fast, up and down, up and down. And when he's in the proper level of conditioning, he'll actually jump off the top of the ladder before these trips, especially the solo trips, to see if he can land properly, if there's enough spring in his legs. Now, unfortunately, yeah. Well, you tell him what happened.
Well, exactly. Excuse me, I shouldn't be laughing right after I had a cupcake and a glass of milk. Exactly 1 week, 7 days before I was supposed to get on the plane, I was going up on my roof to do some repairs, and my right foot was on the top rung of the ladder, my left foot was on the roof, and I was just transferring my weight over to my left foot, and the ladder shot out from under me, and I came down pretty hard, about 8 feet, landed on my back, and my head slammed onto the deck, not onto the flat part of the deck, but right on the edge of the deck.
Gosh, this is amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't even remember it. I was out for about 10 minutes. My wife said I was babbling and gurgling, and I guess I felt like a Democrat for those 10 minutes. the meat wagon got there, and I came to, and I remember the paramedic saying, how you feeling? I said, I fell off my roof. How the hell do you think I feel? And then he said, well, don't try to get up. I said, are you kidding? I can't move. So I was in the hospital for 3 days, and the first day I was not in very good shape. I was in la-la land most of it. But then on the third day, I kept telling them I got to get out because I got to leave for South America in 4 days. And they said, well, let's see if you can walk. So they had some guy put a big belt around me and hold me. I said, what are you doing that for? He said, well, in case you fall down. I said, no, I'm not going to fall down. So I ran for about 20 feet in the hallway, and they said, okay, get your clothes on. You're going home. And 4 days later, I was on a plane to South America.
Well, I know. I talked to you shortly after the accident, and I cannot believe, A, that you're alive, B, you weren't at least crippled somehow, and C, you made the trip, but you did.
Yeah, the doctor, I checked in with my VA doctor when I got back, and he said the same thing. He said, you know, you came so close to breaking your neck and either being dead or being incapacitated. So thank God, though, you know, God watches out for idiots like me and gave me a hard Irish head.
Yeah.
And
happy St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, thank you. A day late. Yeah, today is the birthday of the U-boat commander who sank the first ship in American waters, Reinhard Heyerdahlgen.
Oh, yeah.
103 years old today.
Amazing.
Yeah, and when I was I'm in contact with his son, and about 6 months ago he said that his dad still drives the car, his Mercedes, down the Autobahn.
Well, happy birthday to Reinhard. That's really good news. That
he's a good man. He's been to our patrols many, many times, and over here a couple of times. So that's a good man.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of good men on both sides.
Yeah.
This is a chance for all of you who lived through the war. All right. Certainly grew up with the war being talked about in your family, studied it in high school and college. This is a chance that you all have to find out what really happened. You know the story. The winners write the tale. Well, Harry has dedicated his life to finding out the truth, and through the help of a lot of remarkable people, he has found out extraordinary things about what really happened after the war and at the end of the war. Just an amazing story.
Yeah, that's true, and the history we're taught is a huge dose of fiction in there. Absolutely not correct.
No. No, well, through the wonderful visits that Harry's had on the program here, and we've been able to follow along, we've learned so much, and we're going to learn a lot more tonight. This trip was, again, as I said, a solo trip. You went to Uruguay, Argentina, and Brazil.
Yep.
On the scale of 1 to 10, how successful was this trip?
Extremely successful. I don't know about 1 to 10. The only two things we didn't accomplish, I was supposed to meet with the daughter of Evita Perón, but she backed out at the last moment.
Uh-huh.
And also I was supposed to go into Paraguay because there's a couple of places there I needed to visit, but nobody would rent us a car. And my guide, my friend Martin, he's got a brand-new Volkswagen Passat, and he said he's not going into Paraguay with that. Apparently cars get stolen pretty frequently, yeah. And from what I understand, the area is loaded with narco smugglers and guerrillas who kidnap travelers for ransom. And if I get kidnapped for ransom, they're going to have to settle for $10 or $15 because that's about all I got.
Well, and cupcakes and Entenmann's, but that isn't going to cut it.
No, unfortunately not.
All right. Now, Argentina is the central point of the whole story.
Yep.
That's where. What do you think? Am I off the mark terribly when I say tens of thousands ultimately went down there?
I think that's pretty realistic, especially if you lump in the Croatians who were also part of the Third Reich, huge number, and that helped the Argentine base, because primarily, when I was talking to my friend Eduardo when I was down there this last time, I said, you know, I've been here, this is the fifth time I've been in Argentina, I don't find any Latinos. And he kind of laughed. He says, yeah, because 80% of Argentinians are from Western European stock, primarily German and Italian.
How interesting. Wow.
Yeah, and it never dawned on me, but most of my friends down there are either German or Italian by background. Maybe they've been in the country 3, 4, 5 generations, but,
right.
German and Italian.
Well, you know, you're speaking of Paraguay. I think many of you listening know, but probably the 99% of the public doesn't. The Bush family bought 100,000 acres of land in Paraguay. That's their bug out place. They're ready to go. There's a big airstrip there.
Wow.
They're literally ready to fly down there. And underneath 100,000
acres?
100,000
wow.
acres. Underneath that is an incredible aquifer of water. It's paradise, just waiting. So, yeah,
wow.
They bought a lot of land down there. Many people have. Many have bought in Patagonia. Ted Turner bought a huge chunk, and he gives pieces away to other celebrity types.
Yeah, Ted Turner, he just bought a monster big piece of property. And I was told by one of my friends in Argentina, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but the president who just got bounced, Cristina, this guy says that Cristina used her influence and country's money to buy huge, huge pieces of southern Patagonia for herself. So,
Well, they know where to go when World War III breaks out, and it looks like a question of if, but when. They've got a place. They've got a safe place to go.
Maybe I can get a job. I was spec reps when I was in the Air Force. So
you
if they
get
need
a job.
Nuclear weapons guys, maybe they can hire me again.
Here's a quick read on the Paraguay story. Meeting the new couple next door can be an anxious business for even the most relaxed homeowner. Will they be international drug traffickers? Have they got noisy kids with a penchant for electronic music? As worries go, however, having the U.S. president move in next door must come fairly low on the list. Unless, of course, you are a resident of northern Paraguay and believe reports in the South American press, which are true, that he has bought 100,000 acre, that's 40,500 hectares, a ranch in your neck of the woods. And they did buy it.
Wow, that's a pretty fair-sized ranch.
Yeah.
And property, I guess, is pretty cheap. I don't know what the exchange rate is in Paraguay, but I know in Argentina it's going to hell in a handbasket. 2 years ago when I was there, one Yankee dollar was equal to 6 pesos. But this time when I came down, was 13 pesos to the dollar when I got in country, and when I was getting on a plane to go home, it was 15 pesos
wow.
to the dollar.
It's a buyer's market, folks.
Yeah, and my friend Martin says that their inflation rate is about 35% per year. That's incredible.
Wow, 3 years you get something for free, just about.
Either that or you go broke.
Yeah.
The exchange rate in Uruguay was really, really nice. It was 30 pesos to the dollar. So there were hotels we stayed in, comfortable, nice, not four-star, but nice, air conditioning, shower, et cetera, breakfast including. By the time you're done, it came out to 10 bucks per room, Yankee dollars.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was very, very reasonable in Argentina and Uruguay also. Brazil, not quite so good an exchange rate. It was four reals to the Yankee dollar, but still, really, I stayed in a four-star hotel the last few days there, and it came out to, I think it was less than 50 bucks a night, U.S. money.
Nice. Okay.
And it was with one hell of a breakfast.
Yeah? Like what? Tell me about breakfast.
They had a buffet breakfast, and they had a couple of hundred different items on there. They had cakes, they had pies, they had eggs cooked.
Yeah. See what he mentioned first?
I know, it drives my doctor nuts. Harry, you must get your sugar level down there. Yeah, well, as long as it doesn't hit 300.
That's funny.
I lost 12 pounds while I was down there, but, that part of...
Well, you lost 10 falling off the ladder, so that's 22.
Yeah, that was the high point of my day there, falling off the ladder. And we had just finished a big Italian meal, and I had finished it off with a chocolate shake.
That's too much.
I got into the hospital, and they handed me these things that looked like elephant condoms so that I could barf into this thing, and I filled up about six of them.
Oh, well, all that food.
One of my finer days.
Yeah. Well,
I scared the hell out of my wife and my son. You know, my son is 28, but he's special needs, and between the two of them, they thought they were going to be all alone because they thought I was a goner.
Well, the term Harry has a sweet tooth. Actually, Harry has sweet teeth. they're all sweet. All right, now if you're all loaded up on photos, I hope you are. Just remember, go to guests at Rents and look for Harry Cooper. Under his name, you'll see photos. And his name itself will take you right to Shark Hunters. If you'd like to join, I can guarantee you World War II will be presented to you in such a way that you'll never forget it. Books, DVDs, the real story. It's absolutely incredible. It's time travel. It's amazing.
Yeah,
he has created something that is unique on the planet. Okay,
and
my friend.
If your listeners want to send an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net, and say they listen to the show, I'll send them the current issue electronically, no charge.
Oh,
great. You get it. You've been getting it for, what, 2 years, 3 years now?
Yeah. It's
so
terrific.
So that way they can see, no charge, no strings attached. We'll send it to them.
And the book itself, Hitler in Argentina, you can see on the cover, and there's more inside, but you can see a picture, a color picture, of the Mercedes-built Bavarian, beautiful, I wouldn't call it a mansion, but it's damn close. Maybe it is. It was out there in an inlet.
Manor house.
A manor house, big, where Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun lived for about 10 years. And,
right.
Then moved
10
north.
15 years before they had to move out.
Yeah. And no one's lived there since.
I took that photo myself.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
You got 40 million, folks. It can be yours. Same table is in there, we think. It hadn't changed.
Right. On my website also, under previous tours back in 2008, Argentina, there's a lot of photos that I took in and around that house. It's been empty, vacant since Hitler and Eva Braun moved out. But I learned to pick locks, and so I let myself in and took a lot of photos.
Good man.
They're all up on the post.
Well, they are beautiful. So go to sharkhunters.com, look under previous tours, go back to 2008, and you'll see the house that the two of them lived in before they moved to northern Argentina, where he died.
Cordoba and Mendoza province.
Now, let me remind all of you that we will soon be doing a program with remote viewer Dick Allgaier, who was given as a target, again, unbeknownst to him. He doesn't know what he's looking at. He just gets some numbers. He was given as a target the death of Adolf Hitler. And what Dick Allgaier found, Dick is an amazing remote viewer, will be done on and exposed and revealed on this program. He's putting out a DVD on it. Harry will be here. Jim Morris will be here. And we're going to talk about what Dick Allgaier found out in his remote viewing session and how that stacks up with what Harry knows and what Jim Morris knows. And it'll be a fascinating program. We hope to do that maybe in April. So that's coming up. Okay, my friend, let's go on our trip. And we got about 2 minutes till the break, so we're loaded up. I'm looking at the page of photos. You have it broken down by days, days one and days two combined. So take it away.
All righty. Well, day one and day two combined is pretty boring. It's just my flight down there. Then day three, you see me in the with that beautiful young lady, Rosa. And I told her why I was there, and she just said, well, yeah, well, sure, we all knew Hitler lived out his life in Argentina.
Did she say that? And, she said that? They all know it.
Yeah, and she's married to another Argentinian Argentinian guy, but he's got a German name. And then next to that, there's my friend Hector and myself on a balcony in a restaurant. Hector is a sharp guy. He's translated Hitler in Argentina, and also Hitler and the Secret Alliance.
Oh, he did that for
Spanish.
You. Very good.
Yeah, and also into Portuguese.
Very nice.
Sharp guy. And he and I are working on some other stuff. He's very interested in the U-boats that are scuttled down in the Caleta de los Loros.
How many do we think were scuttled there at the end of the war that were sent off?
I think
two. Only
two?
Two. Okay.
Yeah. There might be others along the way.
Yeah.
And then, of course, day five, there's me and my friend Eduardo. I look like some kind of a puppet. Remember, it's only been a week since I fell off my roof. And I walked into his house, and the first thing he did was rip off my shirt and check my ribs. He's a doctor. Oh, Harry, you've got a bad rib here. Next thing I know, he's got me all taped up with an ace bandage. He's a very nice guy. He's been a member about 12 years. He's the one who got me back on the track of the U-boats in South America. Very, very helpful between me and the Argentine Navy also.
Well, Dr. Eduardo Gerding is German, is it not?
Yep.
Funniest thing. See?
Yeah.
I told you.
They're all doctors, too, and one of them's in Spain, I believe. One's in Brazil. His daughter is a professional person and married to... I think she's married to a doctor, I don't remember, but they live in France, so poor Eduardo, his kids are scattered all over the world.
Well, all right. Very good. Stand by. We'll be right back with Harry as yours truly and Mr. Cooper take a remarkable trip down to Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil. Back in a minute. Okay, and let's get back to our research expedition with Harry in South America, most principally Argentina. Days 7, 8, and 9. Oh, let's go back to, hold on, I missed one.
Hold on.
Yeah, we got to go back to day 6. Now, that's interesting because Dr. Mario Mariscotti, a member of Shark Hunters, apparently wrote a book about that island. This is really a big story.
That's correct. That's an island its island is called Huaymul Island, and it's in Lake Nahuelhuapi, which is down by San Carlos de Bariloche, which is where Hitler had his home. A lot of Third Reich people were, including Mengele was living there for a while. We just got a report yesterday. It came here from one of my guys in Germany that a Jewish lady was down there in, oh boy, I'm going off the top of my head now, 1960, I think it was, and she had been forced into being a mistress of Mengele during the war, and she was down there visiting friends, allegedly, and bumped into Mengele. Well, they think she was a Mossad agent, because 2 days later they found her body at the bottom of a cliff. So that whole area down there, just for some reason, it's kind of like a magnet for spies, etc. Mm-hmm. And like I say, down there in 1945, it was so remote, you couldn't take a train there, no bus, no road. It was hard to get to, and that's where Hitler lived. And then in 1960, President Eisenhower went down there to that little town. Very nice town, but why? Then in the 1990s, Bill Clinton...
Why would he pick that town? That's very strange, yeah.
Bill Clinton went down there also during his presidency, and next week, guess where Obama's going to be?
Bariloche.
Same place. Bariloche.
Accident. It's the history of it, if nothing else.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, you and I will talk off mic one of these days. I'll tell you why we think.
Okay.
So, but anyhow, this very nice man, Dr. Mariscotti, I proofread his book for him. He translated it into English, and he wanted to make sure it read smoothly rather than, you know, throw mama from the train, a kiss.
Right.
Throw me down the stairs, each by each, my shoes. And there was almost no corrections. He translated it perfect. He speaks perfect English. And a very nice guy. He's got a beautiful home. You know, what the heck? He was former chief of the Atomic Energy Commission down there. He has a basement, which is unusual for Buenos Aires, because that's right on the coast. The water table is pretty close. But he's got a nice basement. And he still carries out nuclear experiments down there. He's in his mid-70s.
But at home. Funny.
He's got radioactive material down in his basement. And, they were outstanding hosts. That's his wife sitting next to me at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And across the table is they're friends of his that he's known his whole life from Germany. And the man... I asked him if he was from Silesia in Germany, because he sounds, when he talks and even when he laughs, he sounds exactly like my old friend Otto Kretschmer, the top submarine commander of the war.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, and yeah, he grew up in Silesia, all right.
Yeah, funny.
So we talked about, now there are two different theories about the chief nuclear scientist out there, Dr. Ronald Richter. And Dr. Mariscotti has one theory, and there's another theory that, you know, we cover in our book, rather lengthy. So that's about as far as we need to go on that.
Got it.
Yeah, Pierron built his mountain troop school right across the water, about a half a mile, I guess, across the water on the shore. That's where he built his mountain troop school. Was it to protect the island and the nuclear stuff, or was it to keep an eye on him? Who knows?
There were apparently, just for you listening, German involvements in that island and the nuclear program. We'll just leave it on the table right there.
Yeah, that's as far as we need to go with it. There's more in the book. I don't want to get into it in depth, because we wind up suddenly finding that the clock has run out on us.
Right.
So my next 3 days, this is an absolutely lovely lady, Lawrence DeMello, and in my opinion, she is the number one researcher on Martin Bormann, the world's number one. Yeah, and she is such a nice lady. She invited me out to her ranch, and because I don't speak Spanish and I'd be lost if I was left on my own. So she rode the train for 2 hours to come into Buenos Aires. It's over 100 degrees. There's no AC on the train, just open windows.
Wow.
and she wouldn't even let me pay. We had snacks there at the restaurant before we left. She wouldn't even let me pay for that. She grabbed the check before I could even get to it. She took me out to her house, her ranch, and the picture you see, she and I sitting there, that's actually on the veranda between two of the guest houses. And she took me all around, showed me where everything is, and says, anything you want, get it yourself. Nobody's going to wait on you here. This is not a nanny house. And then she remembered that I had just fallen off my roof, and she says, but what do you need? I'll get it for you. What do you need? And whatever I wanted to eat, she had her cook, Maria, fix for me. Just a charming lady. And the reason I look like Ahab the Arab, I told her I had to get some laundry done before I came out. She says, no, put it in the bag, bring it out here. So when she was throwing my clothes into the washing machine, she says, get out of the clothes you have there, I'll wash them too. And so she gave me this caftan or dashiki or whatever it is. And just a pleasant 3 days, really a class act, fine lady.
That picture on the wall is not Harry Cooper, in case you're wondering.
No, I don't know who that is. That's some lady up on the wall there, but I don't know.
Now, there's a photo, hold on, right behind you in a small frame, a black and white photo, probably from the 40s or 50s. Have I seen that picture before?
Well, it's a good question. I never even noticed it until you pointed it out here. I don't know.
I think we've seen a photo of Mengele in a very similar pose on the porch of a house, his home down there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you saw that in my book.
We've
got a picture of Mengele on the porch of his friend Malbranch in Buenos Aires. Then there's another picture in my book of Mengele and Malbranch just sitting around a table on a patio, and Mengele has his arm around Malbranch's 10-year-old daughter, and I wonder if he had some other interesting hobbies, because he had his hand right down kind of between her legs, and the girl looked like she wished she was anywhere else on the face of the earth.
Yeah, he was a very, very
interesting fellow.
Dark and interesting figure.
Yeah. Interesting fellow.
Now, I want to also commend Lawrence. Don't call me Larry, because that is the orangest, most beautiful orange juice I think I've ever seen. Even better than no offense, Florida orange juice. Look at that orange juice.
It was good. It was darn good. And Maria, she just, if I said, geez, do you have any orange juice? Bang, I got orange juice. Do you have any tea? Bang, tea water was cooking. Lawrence showed me how to work the tea cooker, an electric teapot that makes, boiling water, et cetera. And I never got around to it. Whenever I said, I'm going to make some tea, bang, either Lawrence made it or she had Maria do it. So it's just a wonderful hostess. And we talked a lot. We learned a lot. I think she learned from me about Hitler and those people. I learned from her about Bormann.
There's an interesting book on the table, and it's it looks like it's in Spanish, Portuguese, I don't know. It's a book dealing with Hitler. You can see it right there in the foreground.
Right. It was written by a friend of hers. I'm going off my memory here. I think she said he was an officer in the Argentine Navy, but don't hold me to it. I'm not sure.
That's okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, nice photo. And they see the wall color, that red orange wall.
Yeah.
That's very, very attractive. I guess they do a lot of that in South America. If they don't paint their walls white and beige all the time. It's a terrific looking place. Looks like you're having a wonderful time. And the next photo is a younger lady.
That's her stepdaughter.
Uh-huh.
George. She calls her George. That's typical British. The kid's name is Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But, she calls her George. A very nice young lady. And she was only there a day or so, and she was going back to England. Very nice young lady. And she's very interested in the research that her mom and I were doing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, the next picture to the right of that.
Yeah.
What do we got?
We're not sure what that is, but that belongs to Lawrence. She came across it in her research, maybe a snuff box. It's about 3 inches across and maybe an inch deep, so maybe it's a snuff box. We don't know. She doesn't know.
All right.
But it's in her collection.
Now, there's one object that you know I still want, and one day that's got to happen.
Okay. You just remind me when I have an opportunity to contact that member.
All right.
Nobody knows what that thing is, but anyhow, moving along.
It's a portal to another dimension. I know what it is.
Oh, okay. Well, you're ahead of me on that one.
I don't know.
So,
all right. The next picture is Harry doing what he does probably better than anything. He's eating.
Better than falling off a roof, even.
He's eating. And there's Maria, the wonderful cook, and Harry in his pajamas, or whatever that thing is.
Caftan. Or whatever.
Yeah.
You'll notice it's probably the right size for somebody like Hulk Hogan. Roll the sleeves up, and every time I walk
in, you're on a trip. Be comfortable. It looks great.
Yeah, I was comfortable because it was hotter than the dickens out there. It was over 105, and I had nothing. I mean, all my clothes were in the laundry. I had no skivvies, nothing, just this dress thing that I was wearing there, and the breeze would blow through there, and it was comfortable.
Look at Maria. It made you a nice platter of muffins and a salad. And
she was every time I'd even look toward the kitchen, there's Maria with more food.
You know,
nice lady.
That must be amazing to have a cook in the house, a talented cook. Because I'm a vegan, I'd be very difficult to please, but anyway.
Why, you don't like muffins and salads?
I do, as long as they're organic. Okay, now, that's a great stop. 3 days with Lawrence DeMello. And then we move on to day 10, February 8th.
Yeah, it gets more and more interesting as we go along. And for some reason, I screwed up the chip in my camera, and some of the film didn't make it. We crossed the Rio de la Plata on a ferry boat. Really nice. I think it came to about $70 for Martin, myself, and his car. It was not a bad deal for a 3-hour ride and we went first class. You can upgrade to first class.
Big boat.
And we went I'm sorry?
Big boat.
Oh, yeah, huge. And we landed at the port of Colonia, and then we went to Colonia Suisse, the Swiss colony. Martin is excellent at finding the right people. He found this old lady, and she sent us to a guy named Omar Maria. He had lived there all his life, and he confirmed that Mengele came to that village in 1958, 25th of July. He stayed there for 8 days because he had to marry his brother's wife because his brother had died, and they did it for financial or business reasons. And we went to the house where Mengele lived for those 8 days, and after we got the owner to come out and curb his 13 dogs, he got 13 dogs snarling and chewing at the gate into the house, but he wouldn't let us take photos. And he said, yeah, that's one of the reasons he bought the house is because Mengele stayed there. But right shortly thereafter, he fled into Paraguay because fortunes were starting to turn. Perón had been ousted from power. Eichmann had been kidnapped. And so he figured it's time to get out of Argentina. There's a beautiful monument in that town, which was erected in 1937. And Omar told us there's a swastika flag that was put into the cornerstone of the monument. And unfortunately, that photo was destroyed. I'll learn how to handle these high-tech cameras later on, I guess.
Well, you're going to have to go back.
Oh, yeah, there's no question I'm going back because basically all we did here was open doors. We have open doors, and further on, and as we go further into the trip, I'm going to deliberately not use people's names or say what town they're in because there are people from the hysterical channel probably listening, and
they'll steal everything they get. They can get their hands on.
I don't want them knocking on my friends' doors down there.
Right.
So then we we drove to Montevideo, very nice city, and I wanted to look at the artifacts that came from the Graf Spee, as you see there, the big range finder and one of the 3-inch guns. And the sentry said, nope, no pisar. So we asked for the officer of the deck, and I showed him my credentials from the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, where I was a flotilla commander, mm-hmm. no more, I dropped out. But, oh, man, he was all happy, and, yep, come on in, take all the photos you want. Fortunately, we were able to save these couple of photos. The rest of them I didn't get.
What is the first picture, that gray item with two?
Yeah, that's the rangefinder. That's the huge, big rangefinder that sat up on top of the bridge. You know, the optics end. So that's the rangefinder that was on board the ship when she went down. And this gun was, I think, a 3-inch anti-aircraft.
Did they go down diving to cut it loose and bring it up? Is that what happened?
Right. Yep, that's what they did. And as you see in the third picture down in that series, there's the big eagle that was on the stern of the ship.
Wow.
And you'll notice they've got canvas over the swastika, because everybody knows if you look at a swastika, your brain melts.
And that, or you turn into stone, one or the other.
Yeah, well, like Medusa.
The Graf Spee is sitting at the bottom. How deep? Not that deep, right?
Oh, not deep at all. There was only about 5 to 10 feet of water underneath the keel when it blew up.
Wow. Any talk about trying to refloat it, salvage it? Ever?
Not anymore, because most of it was still out of the water, and then at some point in time, I don't know when or why, some nitwit decided it's a hazard to navigation, so they dynamited and blew it all up, except for everything mm-hmm. that's below the waterline. So mm-hmm. now you can't even see where it is, mm-hmm. unless you're driving along with your, you know, sailing along with your boat and suddenly rip the bottom out. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a ship mm-hmm. underneath me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So... But we did not get in to see that eagle with the swastika. It's in a warehouse in another location.
I see.
In a locked room with an armed sentry. There seems to be a problem between nations, and Uruguay is caught in the middle.
All right, then, the photograph, 1924, what's that about?
Yeah, that one is interesting. You'll notice I obliterated the name of the hotel.
Right.
Click on that picture. And you travel with us. This hotel is very old, but I don't see any indication there are any guests in the hotel. It doesn't look like there have been guests there for a long time. The only people there was the lady who owns it. She's in her 50s, and her daughter. Her dad bought the place from the Catholic Church in 1976. It had been a convent prior to that. And, of course, we know the Catholic Church would never help anybody escaping from the Third Reich, right?
Oh, no, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So we go into the main lobby in a big, beautiful bar back, and then the lady, you know, after we talked to her, she said, okay, here, let me show you. And she slid the white leather sofa out of the way and the white leather ottoman footstool, as you see there, and folded out the carpet, and doggone, there's a hatch. So you open up that little hatch in the
floor.
That's
a picture on the left. You see 1866.
That's correct.
And a hole in the ground, so to speak.
Yep, that's it. Down we go into the bunker, and obviously the new owners have painted all these nice pictures on the wall, because these are all new pictures. But we're about 30 feet under the ground.
Amazing.
Why would a convent need that?
Yeah. Well, it looks like a processing center to me.
Something. But, you know, it's amazing. This hotel, if that's what it really is about a mile out of this little pueblo, and there ain't enough people in the pueblo to make it worthy of the name village. Well, okay, we'll call it a village. But this thing is way out. You know, we had to actually look for it. It's not like it's on a main road.
It's been restored beautifully, and yet it just sits there like frozen in time.
Exactly. And like I say, I didn't see any indication that they had any people there.
How odd.
Yeah. So
now, this are all the pictures that we've been looking at clickable, or is it just this one?
No, this is just where the clickable stuff starts.
Uh-huh.
Prior to that, it was not clickable. But now, from here on down, they're clickable.
Well, at one point in time, that building was obviously quite busy, and they had a real reason to have that bunker down there.
Yeah, exactly. And why would you build a hotel? Well, if it was built as a convent, of course you would want it out in away from everything, convents and... And whatever you call it, where they put the brothers, abbeys, or whatever. They kept them a long way away from the civilization.
When was it built? Do we know? Do we have a date when it was built?
I don't know. But it was, now, you know, the picture says in the year of 1924. But is that when it was built, or I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's been there a while. And 1976 is when the Catholic Church sold it to these people. And we can roll on past that picture of the Graf's Bay. Everybody knows that.
All right, I'm going to go. We have to back click to get out of the bunker and the hotel and go back to the tour. So there's day 12, February 10th. And there's the Graf's Bay.
Yeah. And we got that picture from an old man. We were just having lunch at an outdoor restaurant, and this old man was walking by, and Martin is really good at this. He buttonholed the old guy and asked him if he was around when Graf's Bay, and the guy was 95 years old. He still drives his car, and he said, yep, when he was 18 years old, he rode his bicycle down to the edge of the River Plate to watch the big naval gun battle, and they said, all of a sudden, a massive explosion, and the ship was on fire all over. So he gave us this picture that he took.
For those of you who don't know, the Graf's Bay was allegedly going out to engage the British, and it never got out there. It was destroyed.
It was self-destroyed because they had a battle a couple days before against three British cruisers, Ajax, Achilles, and Exeter.
Yeah.
And they pretty well beat the hell out of these British cruisers. And they went into Uruguay, Montevideo, for repairs, and the Brits were very strong. Uruguay was very pro-British. I didn't know that. And they convinced the Uruguayan officials to tell Langsdorff, the captain, he had 2 days, 48 hours, and he's got to leave no matter what. And then the British, I think it was the ambassador, planted a story in the local newspaper that two British battleships and the aircraft carrier Ark Royal were just
waiting
on scene.
Not true. It was a lie. Yeah.
That's true, but you're right. It was a lie, but unfortunately, Langsdorff believed it, and he scuttled his own ship, and then when he found out that he had been suckered, he committed suicide.
Wow. All right, hold on. That's our first hour with Admiral Cooper. We'll come right back with hour number two, and our trip continues in just a few minutes.